Good afternoon, and we are back from commercial break. This is your producer, Christina Michelle. I am here moderating today's show. We have a guest, Chuck Dickerson. He's joining us via Zoom from Los Angeles, California, and Chuck is the founder, executive director, and conductor of the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles. And we are just going to continue on with the very informative conversation that we've been having about classical music and the role that blacks and other races have played in it, and more specifically, have not played in it, and some of the barriers to being part of this genre that African Americans have and are experiencing. Chuck, can you tell us, what are the most coveted positions in the orchestra? You've already explained in detail what the orchestra consists of, which I didn't know that orchestras were so large and that there were so many instruments played. But in such an elaborate grouping, I would wonder if there are coveted positions, and if so, what are they?
Well, yes, there are coveted positions. They are not, this is not something that people talk about a lot, but everybody seeks to be in the first chair.
Okay.
Now, in the orchestra, generally, the first chair of the first violin section is called the concert master, or when there is a woman, you might call her the concert mistress.
Okay.
But either way, that is the person who is thought of oftentimes as the conductor's, almost like the conductor's assistant. In today's modern world, there are assistant conductors, associate conductors, who also participate and are hired by the bigger orchestras. You're in Alaska. I don't know if there's an orchestra in Juneau. I know that there's a major U.S. orchestra in Seattle, which might be the closest to you. They have not only their principal conductor, but they also have associate conductors. But within the orchestra itself, I mentioned to you before, there are 16 first violins. Well, the first violinist is the concert master. Well, there's also a what we call a principal position for every single instrument. So in the second violin section, although you generally would have 14 to 16 players, generally 14 players, there's going to be a lead. And that lead is the person who sits in the front row, the first person at the first music stand. That's the principal second violinist. You'd have a principal violist, a principal cellist, a principal bass player, a principal hornist, a principal trumpet, a principal trombonist, a principal oboe, principal flute, principal clarinet, principal bassoon, and a principal percussion player. And by the way, oftentimes in most major orchestras, you distinguish the tympanist from other orchestra percussion players, and that's because the timpani is pretty much a classical a fixture in the classical orchestra, whereas many of the other percussion instruments are not. But there is a principal, a lead in each of these sections of the orchestra, and there's two things why it's more prestigious. Number one, they are looked to as the leader, like the captain of their team, so to speak. And number two, generally, they are paid more.
Got it.
So if you become the principal of a section in an orchestra, you're generally being paid. The first flautist is being paid more than the second flautist, generally.
Okay, interesting. Okay, and so before we started talking about this, I was wondering if we saw African Americans in these positions less, but now knowing what I know from what you've already shared, we're not seeing them in the orchestra hardly at all. So,
That's right.
yeah.
Notwithstanding that, I can identify at least for you right now one person who I know of who is a principal who's African American, and in an important and major U.S. orchestra. That is Anthony McGill
Okay.
is the principal clarinetist in the New York Philharmonic. He is the only African American in that orchestra, but he is also the principal clarinetist. There are other principles around. I just frankly can't identify them right now, but
wow.
because there's so few and so rare.
Yeah.
I know a guy who's in Atlanta. Alex Lang. Alex Lang is the principal clarinetist of the Phoenix Symphony.
Okay.
But I mean, these are very, very few.
Yeah.
Far between.
In your opinion, what was different for them? How do you think that they got the opportunity that they got to be in the orchestra and then to also be principals? We're talking about, I mean, thousands of musicians in a classical orchestra across the United States, and we're hard pressed to name more than, you know, 4 or 5 African Americans, especially principals. What do you think has been different for them? And I know that's probably a hard question to answer, but if you were to guess, what might you say?
This is not a guess.
Okay.
This is not a guess at all.
All right.
I refer to this as the Jackie Robinson syndrome. When Branch Rickey wanted to integrate Major League Baseball, he didn't go out and find just some journeyman ball player that was going to sit on the bench. He had to go out and find a person who he thought perhaps was even the best.
Mm.
So that he could immediately promote that person to the major leagues, and that person would be a star. And in fact, that's what Jackie Robinson was. Well, the same still, that phenomenon still plays itself out in so much of American society. An African American can't just be as good as somebody else who's going to who's going to perhaps be the president of the bank. Or who's going to perhaps be the superintendent of the education system in a particular city? You've got to shine yourself a little bit beyond just the best.
Absolutely.
And that, I think, has been the case with Anthony and the case with Alex. They've had to demonstrate not only are they capable, but they are so far so shiny of an object that as the freight train drives by, you kind of have to stop and pick up that shiny object and say, okay, well, gosh, that piece of gold there glitters a little bit more brightly.
Yeah.
So let's bring that person on, and then let's bring that person on to be our principal.
Yeah.
I will also share with you that there is an effort in the American orchestra industry right now to try to do a better job of diversity,
okay.
of diversifying its personnel. And in that respect, I think there is really an attempt to try to actually be deliberate about finding people who are not just white, but people of color, women, and et cetera, other people who represent diversity, so that American orchestras can start to look a little bit more like America, so that American orchestras won't die.
Yeah.
Because if they – think of this – much of the music that American orchestras play is composed by dead white people.
Yeah.
Just like if you look on a dollar bill, same thing. What we have on our currency, dead white people. Well, you know, there was talk for a minute about trying to put not Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman on one of the dollar bills as an effort to demonstrate more diversity of the American world.
Yes.
That has been stopped by the current administration.
Okay.
But that same principle holds true beyond just the dollar bill. In American orchestras, we play primarily the music of dead white people. We're trying to change that. And if we continue to do that, American audiences are going to shrink, and we're not going to be able to attract people to our concert halls. And as a consequence, American orchestras would ultimately die.
Mm.
So American orchestras, they're not stupid. They understand that there is a need for them to diversify so that perhaps they will attract people to come to the concert hall to see the Anthony McGills, to see the Alex Lang, to see the guy in Minnesota, the Cox, the conductor, so that people will understand, yeah, there are people like me up there on that stage. Let me go and support them.
Yes. So I can see what you're saying about Anthony McGill and Alex Lang and how they had to be not good, not great, but they had to be the best. They had to be a little bit better than great, you know.
Right.
I'm wondering how finances typically play a role when it comes to blacks and classical music and getting into that. And in our last show, Miss Lori had actually mentioned that there's a problem sometimes with having music or having instruments available to practice and to play with at home. Do you see this in classical as well?
To become a classical instrumentalist costs a lot of money.
Got it.
And I'm going to be, I try to be as clear about this and make this example as best as I can. To win an audition in American orchestra, you have to be extraordinarily good. And I liken this to LeBron James.
Okay.
LeBron James, I don't know this to be a fact, but I'll bet you he had a basketball in his hands when he was 3 and 4 years old. So that he's able to perform magic practically with that basketball. I mean, that's how Magic Johnson got his name. He was performing magic, or his nickname, I should say. He was performing magic with the basketball. Well, the same is true, I think, in any discipline. And the younger you start to understand and have an opportunity to participate in a particular trade, the better you are at. There's no mystery to the fact that Bach's sons were fantastic musicians. They grew up in a home where there was music around them. All right. I'm going to the issue of finances.
Okay.
With regard to the cost of preparing to become a musician that is good enough to play in an American orchestra, you've got to start your training at a very early age. I had my first piano lesson when I was 3 years old.
Okay.
Well, that cost my parents money because they had to pay for me to have piano lessons. I took piano lessons from the time I was 3 until I was 12. That's 10 years. I know the 3 and the 2, but yeah, right. It was 10 years of piano lessons that I really had, and my parents had to pay for those piano lessons. They also had to pay to have a piano in the house.
Yeah.
Well, even if you want to just play a flute, you've got to buy a flute or get access to a flute. That's going to cost you money. Then, as you get older and start to prepare more and more, just as I was explaining earlier, the argument was that we didn't have experience in ensemble playing. Well, now what you want to do is you want to start getting your children involved in ensembles at an early age.
Okay.
For example, if you wanted your child to become a ballerina, you're going to take that child to a ballet class. And therefore, you're going to be where that child is going to be trained with other up aspiring ballerinas. So you got to pay to get them in those classes, just like Little League baseball.
Yeah.
You want your child to play Little League baseball, you got to pay for them to have that team experience. Same is true with musicians. Now, if you've learned your instrument well enough, now you got to go and find an orchestra to play in. And when you're young, you can go and find a youth orchestra to play in. They rarely exist in African American and Latino communities. As a matter of fact, my orchestra, the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles, that's my primary orchestra, we specifically exist in the African American community of Los Angeles to give young people in that community the opportunity to play in ensemble. Because if they didn't play in my orchestra, they'd have to go to outlying areas. That's going to cost their parents money to
Yes.
get them there. It's going to cost them time in terms of just the accessibility of getting to places like that. And so it is not an inexpensive venture. And then once you get really good, now you're going to need specialized lessons. And the cost for those specialized lessons is extremely expensive. $100 to $200 to $300 an hour is not
Oh,
uncommon
wow.
to have a lesson with someone who is a professional in a 1 hour lesson
Oh, my
in
goodness.
someone who's plays for an orchestra. So it is an expensive venture.
Wow, and how many lessons would you say if we're talking about specialized lessons, several hundred dollars an hour, how many would you say are needed, like a week or a month? Or would it be something that you almost like a consultant, like you'd maybe have one lesson, you know, in a month or 2 or 3 months, and then you continue on your own?
My dear friend Alex Lang, who I've referred to earlier, who is the principal clarinetist of the Phoenix Symphony, I'll bet you Alex still takes lessons.
Yeah.
I'll bet you he still goes and finds, particularly he's got a piece of music he's got to prepare for the orchestra. I'll bet you, Alex, I don't know this for a fact, but I would bet, knowing Alex as I do, mm-hmm. I would bet you he goes and consults with another clarinetist.
Yeah.
Probably a master teacher, so to speak,
yes.
And pay a couple hundred bucks for an hour of instruction easily.
Yeah.
Even, and he's at the top of his game.
Yeah.
So for those who are still aspiring to get there, it's impossible to tell you how many hours you need to put in to make. There's an old saying. people ask, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? And the answer is practice, practice, practice. And oftentimes that practice, practice, practice is done with the assistance of a teacher, teacher, teacher.
Yes.
And that costs money, money, money.
Good answer. Whew, goodness, this is deep. It's much more than I ever knew. And I believe that our listeners are learning just as much as I am here.
I hope so.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm going to ask this question. Should parents of Black children prepare their children differently if they are interested in learning classical music? And you've already touched on this a little bit, saying that they need to start early.
I'm not sure if I know what you mean by differently, though.
Well, I guess I should say, in other words, are there challenges or stereotypes that they should prepare their children to expect? So outside of finances and being ready to invest heavily financially, is there a certain mindset that they need to have or that they need to train their children to have in order to really be successful in this industry?
I have two parts to get to that answer.
Okay.
First part has nothing to do with ethnicity, race, or whatever.
Okay.
I think every parent should teach their children music, and there's reasons why, whether they want their children to aspire to be professional musicians or not. And that's because so many principles of life can be taught and learned through music.
Mm.
For example, all music has a rhythm. Life has a rhythm.
Yes.
You can learn the rhythm of life through music. Music has dynamics, that is, loudness and softness. There are times in life when it's appropriate to be loud. You learn how to be loud and how to make that loudness beautiful through music. There's times to be soft in music. There's times to be soft in life. And music, I think there's no better way to teach a person how to be soft and yet beautiful and yet important and be quiet about it.
Mm.
You learn this music. You learn that there are times when you have the melody and it's time for you to step up and to speak up. There are times when you have the harmony, when you are in a supporting role. There's hardly any better discipline to learn these kinds of things about life than in music. And that applies to all persons. I don't care what your ethnicity is. With respect to people who are African-American and other minorities, I think there is a second dynamic, and that is, yes, you still need to be able to know that the industry is still an industry that is not as open as we would yet like it to be in the American ideal. But, you know, you learn that as an African-American, you learn that anyway, whether you're in music or any other discipline, and that's probably true. That I'm sure American indigenous Americans learn that, you know, you got to be better, you got to present yourself in an appropriate way in order to try to break through a barrier that is oftentimes put up in front of you because of your ethnicity or your color or your race.
Excellent answer. Thank you. Thank you. And I love that, what you said about the rhythm and just what music has to teach us about life. So that's so important.
There's a time to be the soloist.
There's a time to be the soloist.
There's a time to be in the ensemble.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love that analogy. So we're going to just go ahead and pause for a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we are going to hear from our guest, Chuck Dickerson, on what's next for him and how our listeners can connect with and support his organization. We'll be right back.